A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and I'll be honest, it landed at the right moment. His basic question is, how do you build a family preparedness binder that lets you compartmentalize the whole thing into a 30-minute quarterly review so you stay ready without spiraling into anxiety or obsession? He's lived through escalations here. He knows the mental toll of keeping preparedness front of mind, and he's looking for a system that respects that. Something you can open 4 times a year, update, and then forget about entirely between those bursts.
This is the exact tension that doesn't get talked about enough. You need to be ready. That's non-negotiable when you live in a region where sirens are a recurring feature of life. But thinking about it constantly is corrosive. It eats at your ability to be present for the normal stuff, your work, your family, your Tuesday afternoon, that should just be a Tuesday afternoon.
That's the paradox, right? The people who take preparedness seriously are often the ones most prone to letting it colonize their mental real estate. You start with a reasonable water storage plan, and 6 months later you're calculating caloric density per cubic foot of pantry space at 3 in the morning.
I've seen that spiral of patients. Not that I treated them for preparedness obsession specifically, but you'd notice the anxiety patterns. And here's the thing. FEMA updated their guidance in 2025, and local civil defense protocols have shifted too. So if you don't have a low-friction system, you either burn out trying to track every change, or you let your plan go stale and it's useless when you actually need it.
Daniel's framing of this as a spaced repetition problem is what caught my attention. We know from the forgetting curve research, Ebbinghaus, classic memory science, that reviewing something once and never touching it again gives you about 20% retention. But space review at 30-day intervals bumps that to around 80%. He's essentially proposing we apply that to emergency readiness, concentrated bursts of attention, then deliberate forgetting.
Which is exactly how schools run fire drills, by the way. Nobody runs fire drills daily, quarterly, maybe twice a year. The system works because it's intermittent, but consistent. The binder Daniel's describing would be the same logic applied to the full spectrum of household emergencies. Not just fire, but everything from earthquakes to the kinds of regional escalations we've both lived through.
The timing matters. We're not in some abstract preparedness thought experiment here. The Middle East doesn't exactly take years off from volatility. If you're going to live here and stay sane, you need a system that doesn't require you to be on alert mentally 365 days a year.
That's the part most preparedness culture misses entirely. The bunker mentality crowd treats constant vigilance as a virtue, but constant vigilance is just chronic stress with a tactical vest on. What Daniel's actually asking for is a cognitive offloading system, something that holds the readiness burden so your brain doesn't have to.
Let's unpack what this binder actually looks like and why it solves the cognitive load problem. Because the idea is deceptively simple. A single physical binder that becomes your household's source of truth for procedures, checklists, inventory tracking, and refresh schedules. But the design decisions matter. Get them wrong and it's just another shelf ornament you feel guilty about ignoring.
And the existing resources don't exactly help with this. FEMA's Make a Plan template is comprehensive. I've gone through it. But it's designed as a one-time fill-in-the-blanks exercise, not a living document built for spaced review cycles. Same with the Red Cross guides. They're thorough, they're well-researched, but they're not structured for the rhythm Daniel's describing. 30 minutes per quarter, 1 to 2 hours annually, and genuine mental freedom in between.
That's the key design constraint. It's not just make a binder. It's make a binder that you can meaningfully engage with in 30 minutes, 4 times a year, and have it actually keep you prepared. That's a different engineering problem than just compiling emergency information.
It's one worth solving, because the alternative, what most people actually do, is oscillate between neglect and panic. They ignore preparedness for 18 months, something happens in the news, and suddenly they're down a rabbit hole of worst-case scenarios for 2 weeks straight. That cycle is worse than doing nothing, honestly. It spikes cortisol, it leads to impulsive decisions, and it doesn't produce a sustainable state of readiness.
The binder is essentially a circuit breaker for that cycle. You schedule the attention, you bound it, and then you give yourself permission to not think about it, which is, counterintuitively, what keeps the system alive. If preparedness feels like an infinite obligation, you'll avoid it. If it's a 30-minute appointment on the first Sunday of the quarter, you'll do it.
There's a clinical parallel here. In pediatric practice, we use scheduled anxiety time with some older kids. You get 10 minutes to worry about the thing, write it down, and then you're done. The binder applies that same compartmentalization logic to household safety. Your brain gets to trust that the information is handled, so it stops nudging you about it at random.
We've got the psychological case. The practical question Daniel's really asking is, what goes in this thing? How do you structure it so a 30-minute review actually works? And how do you keep it current as official guidance evolves? Because FEMA's not going to stop updating their recommendations, and the threat landscape, especially here, doesn't exactly freeze in place.
That last point is not theoretical. We've seen shifts in rocket defense covers that changed the calculus for some neighborhoods from shelter in place to evacuate. We've seen new building code data after seismic surveys. If your binder is static, it's not a preparedness tool, it's a historical document.
Which is why the quarterly review isn't just maintenance. It's the thing that makes the binder alive. Without it, you've just got a very organized, full sense of security.
When we say family preparedness binder, what are we actually describing? It's a single physical object, a three-ring binder, that becomes the household's single source of truth for everything emergency-related. Procedures, checklists, inventory tracking, contact information, medical details, document copies, and a refresh schedule that tells you when to review each section. No scattered notes. No, I think that's in my email somewhere.
The design goal is specific. You should be able to open this thing, spend 30 minutes with it, and close it knowing you've actually done something meaningful. That's not how most preparedness materials are built. FEMA's template is a one-and-done exercise. You complete it, feel virtuous for an afternoon, and then it sits in a drawer until it's outdated.
The Red Cross guides have the same issue. They cover the right ground. Water storage at 1 gallon per person per day for at least 3 days, the communication plan with an out-of-state contact, all of that. But they present everything as a single monolithic task, which is exactly what makes people avoid it.
That's the cognitive problem in a nutshell. A monolithic task feels overwhelming, so you procrastinate. A 30-minute quarterly appointment feels manageable, so you do it. The binder structure has to enforce that distinction. It needs to break preparedness into discrete, reviewable chunks that map onto the calendar.
This is really about designing a system that respects your cognitive bandwidth. You only have so much mental energy for thinking about worst-case scenarios. The binder takes the burden of remembering and tracking off your brain and puts it onto paper where it belongs. Your job is just to show up 4 times a year and follow the checklist.
Which is why Daniel's emphasis on deliberate forgetting between reviews is so important. That's not laziness. It's the mechanism that makes the whole thing sustainable. If preparedness feels like an infinite open tab in your mind, you'll eventually close it just to get some peace. The quarterly rhythm gives you permission to close it, knowing it'll reopen on schedule.
There's something almost countercultural about that, given how much of the preparedness space is built around constant vigilance as a virtue. But constant vigilance is just anxiety with a brand name. What we're talking about is more like, you know how a well-designed kitchen has a place for everything? The binder is that for emergency readiness. You don't think about where the spatula is until you need it, because the system handles that for you. The first thing FEMA's template nails, and this is non-negotiable, is the contact section. But it's not just a phone list. The key element is an out-of-state contact. Someone outside your immediate area who can serve as a relay point when local networks go down.
Because when cell towers are overwhelmed, which happens in every escalation here, you can't reach your neighbor 3 streets over, but you might be able to get a text through to your cousin in Ohio, and that person becomes the hub for the whole family to check in.
Most people skip this because it feels like a small detail. It's not. In a major event, local circuits jam within seconds. An out-of-state contact is your family's switchboard. The binder should have that person's number in large print on the first page, not buried in a contacts list, but front and center.
alongside meeting points. FEMA recommends two. One right outside your home for sudden emergencies, like a fire, and one outside your neighborhood for situations where you can't get back. In Jerusalem, that second one matters a lot. Certain streets become impassable fast during security incidents.
You need to actually write down the address, not assume everyone knows it. Under stress, people forget things they've known for years. The binder doesn't judge, it just has the information.
Next section, utility shutoffs. Gas, water, electricity. Most people have no idea where their gas shutoff valve is, let alone which direction to turn it. The binder should have photos, actual printed photos, of each shutoff point with arrows drawn on them. Because when you're fumbling in the dark with a wrench, a written description of the red valve near the meter is useless.
That's a perfect example of why the binder needs to be designed for stress state cognition. You're not reading it over coffee. You're reading it while something is happening. So the procedural checklists, and this is the third major section, need to be written differently than normal prose. Short imperative sentences. One action per line. Nothing that requires interpretation.
This is where FEMA's 2025 earthquake guidance is actually a good model. Drop, cover, and hold on. Three words, unambiguous. But here's the adaptation for the Middle East. Most buildings here don't have basements. FEMA's American guidance assumes you might have a basement to shelter in. Here, stairwells are often the reinforced core of the building. So your earthquake checklist should say, move to the stairwell if possible. Not get to the basement, which doesn't exist.
You'd want separate checklists for each scenario. Earthquake, fire, flood, active threat. Each one no more than a single page, and each one tested. By tested, I mean you actually walk through it during one of your quarterly reviews. Physically move to the meeting point, physically locate the shutoff valve. The binder prompts the drill.
Which brings us to the inventory section. And this is where most systems collapse. People stockpile. They've got water bottles under the bed, canned goods in the pantry, batteries in a drawer. But there's no tracker. So 6 months later, half the batteries are dead. The water's been drunk and not replaced, and nobody remembers what's actually in the stash.
The consumables tracker solves this. A simple grid in the binder, item, quantity, expiration date, reorder trigger. Water at 1 gallon per person per day for 3 days, minimum per Red Cross guidelines. So, for a family of four, that's 12 gallons. Write it down. Check it quarterly. When you're down to the reorder trigger, you restock. No mental math required.
Medications are the trickiest category here because they're person-specific and expiration dates are rigid. The binder should have a medication page per family member. What they take, dosage, prescribing doctor, pharmacy number. And the quarterly review is when you check those expiration dates and rotate stock. If you're not doing that, your first aid kit is a museum of expired ibuprofen.
The medical section goes beyond medications, though. Copies of insurance cards, vaccination records, blood types, known allergies. In an evacuation scenario where you end up at a different hospital, having that printed out means you're not relying on a hospital portal that might not be accessible.
That's the paper versus digital question Daniel raised, which is really a both-and situation. Paper is the master copy because paper doesn't care if the power's out or the cell network is jammed. It's the thing you grab when nothing else works.
Paper has a real weakness. It's static. If FEMA updates its earthquake guidance or the Red Cross changes the water recommendation, your paper binder doesn't know that. So the hybrid model is a paper binder with a digital companion, a Google Drive folder or a Notion page that mirrors the structure. You update the digital version during quarterly reviews, then print the changed pages and swap them into the physical binder.
The digital version also serves as a backup if the physical binder is destroyed, say, in a fire. But the key rule is, the paper copy is the one you reach for in an emergency. The digital companion is for updates and redundancy, not for crisis use.
There's a real-world example of why this matters. During the 2024 escalation here, a family in Jerusalem had a printed map of neighborhood shelter locations in their binder. When the sirens went off and phone networks jammed, which they did within about 90 seconds, they didn't need to load a map app. They already knew exactly where to go because the paper was right there.
That's how fast a network can go from functional to useless when everyone in a city tries to use it simultaneously. If your evacuation route lives exclusively on your phone, you're betting your family's safety on those 90 seconds. The binder doesn't make that bet.
Here's the thing about the inventory tracker that most people don't consider. It solves the out-of-sight, out-of-mind problem, not just for supplies, but for the entire preparedness mindset. When you know the binder has the expiration dates tracked and the reorder trigger set, your brain can genuinely let go. You don't need to mentally inventory the pantry every time you walk past it.
That's the cognitive offloading in action. The binder does the remembering, so you don't have to. Which loops right back to Daniel's core insight. The system only works if you trust it enough to forget about it between reviews. And trust comes from design. If the binder is well structured, you'll trust it. If it's a mess of loose papers and outdated checklists, you won't. And you'll be right not to.
We've built the binder. Now the hard part, maintaining it without it becoming a second job. Because that's where most systems die, not in the design phase, but somewhere around month 4 when the quarterly reminder pops up and you think, I'll get to it next week.
The quarterly review has to earn its 30 minutes. If it feels like bureaucratic paperwork, you'll dodge it. If it feels like a quick, satisfying checklist that gives you genuine peace of mind, you'll actually do it. So the structure matters.
Here's how I'd break down those 30 minutes. First 10, inventory check. You're not reorganizing the pantry, you're scanning the consumables tracker for anything that expired or got used. Battery still good? Medications within date? It's a scan, not an audit. If something needs restocking, you add it to your regular shopping list and move on.
Second 10 minutes, procedure review. This is where you glance at FEMA and local civil defense for any updates. But critically, you're not doom-scrolling. You've got a single bookmark folder with the 3 or 4 pages that matter. Open, scan for changes, note anything relevant. If nothing changed, you're done in 2 minutes, and you spend the remaining 8 drilling one scenario.
That drill piece is the part people skip, but it's the highest value activity in the whole review. Walk to the gas shutoff. Time how long it takes to reach the meeting point. Have everyone in the household locate the binder itself. Under stress, procedural memory is what survives, not rational deliberation. You want the actions in your body, not just on the page.
The final 10 minutes, contacts, and one scenario walkthrough. Verify the out-of-state contacts number still works. People change numbers and forget to tell you. Confirm meeting points haven't been compromised by construction or road changes. Then pick one scenario from the checklist section and physically rehearse it. 10 minutes, once a quarter, rotating through earthquake, fire, active threat, whatever seasonally relevant.
Now the annual deep dive is a different animal, 1 to 2 hours, and it's where you reassess assumptions rather than just refresh data. This is where the assumptions page becomes the most important page in the entire binder.
Why is a page of assumptions more important than the checklists or the inventory?
Because it captures why you made decisions, not just what the decisions were. Say you're storing 5 gallons of water per person per day instead of the Red Cross minimum of 1 gallon. The assumptions page would say, we store 5 gallons because our building's water supply has been cut during previous escalations, and the extra covers sanitation and cooking, not just drinking. 2 years from now, during the annual review, you might look at that and think, is this still necessary? But you won't second guess past you without understanding the reasoning. Without the assumptions page, you either blindly continue or you cut back without remembering why you made the choice in the first place.
That's smart. It prevents the annual review from becoming a reset where you relitigate every decision from scratch. You're building on previous reasoning instead of starting over.
The annual review is also when you ask the bigger questions. Has the threat profile changed? We've seen drone warfare tactics evolve significantly in this region. Does that change your shelter in place versus evacuation calculus? New earthquake fault data from seismic surveys. Does that affect your structural risk assessment? New family members, new health conditions, new medications that need cold storage during a power outage? All of that gets reassessed once a year and documented on the assumptions page.
There was a family in Tel Aviv who did exactly this. Their original plan was shelter in place, standard for rocket attacks. But after the new air defense systems shifted coverage patterns, their annual review revealed that their neighborhood was now in a different risk band. They switched to an evacuation model. Without that scheduled reassessment, they'd have been operating on outdated assumptions.
Official guidance changes too, and tracking it without spiraling is a design challenge. My suggestion, set one calendar reminder per year, maybe a week before your annual review, to check the three sources that matter: FEMA, Red Cross, and your local civil defense authority. Spend 20 minutes scanning for updates. Anything you find goes into the binder's changelog page with a date and a one-line explanation of what changed and why you're adopting it or not.
The changelog is the audit trail. It's what keeps the binder from becoming a black box, where nobody remembers why page 7 says something different than it did last year. And it's also what makes the system transferable. If something happens to you, another family member can understand the evolution of the plan.
Now let's talk about the anxiety angle, because this is where the psychology gets interesting. Ebbinghaus showed that spaced repetition at 30-day intervals boosts retention to around 80% versus 20% for a single review. That's the cognitive mechanism. But the emotional mechanism is equally important. Compartmentalization reduces cortisol spikes by eliminating the need to think about preparedness between reviews.
Your brain gets to close the file. That's not a metaphor. It's what the research on cognitive load actually shows. Open loops create background stress. Closed loops don't. The quarterly review is essentially a scheduled file-closing ritual.
This is why the fire drill model works so well as a comparison. Schools don't run fire drills daily. They run them quarterly or biannually. The system works because it's intermittent but consistent. The binder applies that same logic to the full spectrum of household emergencies. You're not on alert 365 days a year. You're on alert for 30 minutes, 4 times a year, and you practiced enough that the procedural memory is there when you need it.
The cortisol difference between I have a system and I should probably do something about preparedness is enormous. One is a closed loop. The other is background dread that never resolves. And background dread is what drives people into those dark preparedness rabbit holes Daniel mentioned, the ones where you're calculating caloric density at 3 a.m.
The binder is essentially a boundary object. It contains the preparedness impulse inside a defined container with defined edges, 30 minutes, 4 times a year, plus an annual deep dive. Outside those windows, you give yourself genuine permission to not think about it, which, counterintuitively, is what keeps you engaged with the system long term. If preparedness feels infinite, you'll avoid it. If it's finite and scheduled, you'll show up.
If you're sold on the idea, here's exactly what you do this week. Go buy a 3-ring binder. Nothing fancy. The kind that costs a few shekels at any office supply store. Label them contacts, procedures, inventory, medical, documents.
Start with FEMA's Make a Plan template as your base. It's free, it's downloadable, and it covers the structural bones, the out-of-state contact, the meeting points, the communication protocol. Fill that out first, print it, and it becomes the skeleton you hang everything else on.
Then localize it. FEMA's template assumes American infrastructure, basements, certain building codes, a particular emergency response ecosystem. You need to adapt for your region's specific threats. If you're in Jerusalem, your earthquake procedure accounts for stairwells instead of basements. If you're in an area with rocket risk, your shelter list includes the nearest protected space with the door code if there is one.
Second actionable step, open your calendar right now and set a recurring event for the first Sunday of every quarter. Treat it exactly like a dentist appointment, non-negotiable but finite. You wouldn't skip the dentist because you're not in the mood and you don't spend 6 hours there either.
The first Sunday timing is deliberate, by the way. It's predictable, it's not competing with holidays, and it gives you a clean quarterly cadence. January, April, July, October. Your brain will start to expect it.
Third step, and this is the one most people skip, create the assumptions page. Blank sheet of paper at the front of the binder. Write down why you store what you store. 1 gallon of water per person per day for 3 days per Red Cross guidelines. We added an extra 2 gallons per person because our building's water supply was cut during the 2024 escalation. We chose the school parking lot as the secondary meeting point because it's outside the congestion zone and has open sight lines.
That page is insurance against your future self. A year from now, when you're doing the annual review and wondering why you bought 14 gallons of water instead of 12, the answer is right there. You don't waste time relitigating decisions you already made with good reasoning.
It makes the annual update dramatically faster. Instead of starting from scratch, you're reviewing a documented chain of logic and asking, is any of this no longer true? That's a 1-hour exercise. Starting from scratch is a whole weekend you'll never actually do.
Those three things, the 5-tab binder, the recurring calendar event, and the assumptions page, that's the minimum viable system. You can do all of it this week in under 2 hours, and from that point forward, preparedness is a 90-minute per year commitment. Everything beyond that is optimization. One thing I keep turning over, and I think Daniel would ask this, is what happens when not everyone in the household is on board with the system. Multi-generational families, elderly parents who aren't going to use a Notion companion, kids who are too young to drill but old enough to need to know where the binder lives.
That's the adoption problem. And the binder actually handles it better than digital-only systems precisely because paper is the interface everyone already knows. Your grandmother doesn't need to log into anything. She just needs to know the binder is on the shelf by the front door, and page 1 has the out-of-state contact in large print. The tech literacy barrier disappears when the master copy is physical.
The harder part is the quarterly review itself. If you're the one person maintaining the system for a household of 6, does it still work in 30 minutes?
It does if you're only maintaining the system, not doing everyone's thinking for them. The review is updating information and checking supplies. The drill, walking to the meeting point, locating shutoffs, that's a family activity you schedule separately, and it's probably the one quarterly thing everyone participates in. 10 minutes, once a quarter, no screens. Kids treat it like a fire drill at school. It's normal.
Which makes me wonder about scaling this past a single household. Could a neighborhood version work? A community shared binder with block level meeting points. A roster of who has medical training, who has a generator, which houses have basement shelter space.
That's essentially a mutual aid framework with a binder as the coordination layer. It's not a new idea. Community emergency response teams do versions of this, but the quarterly review rhythm would be the innovation. Imagine 5 families on a street, each maintaining their household binder, and once a year they spend an hour syncing the neighborhood-level pages. Now you've got distributed resilience without anyone needing to become the block's full-time emergency coordinator.
The other frontier is automation. Smart home sensors that track water levels, temperature and food storage, medication expiration dates, and push an update to the digital companion before each quarterly review. You open the binder, and the inventory section has already flagged what's low or expiring.
That's where this gets interesting. The binder becomes a human-readable output of sensor data you don't have to think about day to day. The system does the monitoring, you do the deciding. But the paper master copy stays non-negotiable. Because sensors fail, networks fail, and the one thing that works when everything else doesn't is a printed page in a 3-ring binder.
That's the thread that runs through this whole conversation. The binder isn't about optimizing for the ideal scenario. It's about being ready for the moment when the ideal scenario evaporates and doing it in a way that doesn't ask you to live in that moment before it arrives.
Which brings us back to Daniel's original instinct. Preparedness shouldn't colonize your mental life. It should be a tool you pick up, use briefly, and put down, confident that it'll be there when you need it and content to ignore it when you don't.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
Lake Vostok, trapped beneath nearly 4 kilometers of Antarctic ice, contains water that is supersaturated with nitrogen and oxygen, roughly 50 times the gas concentration of surface lakes. Meaning, if you drilled through and released the pressure, the water would fizz like a shaken soda can.
Right. The open question we'll leave you with is this. If you build the binder this week, and we think you should, what's the one scenario your household is least prepared for right now? That's your first checklist. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you got something out of this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It actually helps people find the show. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My Weird Prompts.
protects the close from sloth, from man, from long. It holds my windpromes until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.